Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, October 26, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by the Ecomagination Challenge from GE. GE and its partners are awarding $200 million to ideas that help build the next generation power grid for the 21st century. For more information and to view and comment on ideas, go to ecomagination.com/challenge. And also by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or visit slingbox.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us from across the waters, Mr. Patrick Beja. Welcome back, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Patrick,
I'm surprised that you would ask me to be on again.
Why are you surprised?
I don't know. I always am surprised when people ask me again on podcasts. I'm like, but I'm French.
No. People love that. They love that you strike and eat cheese and smell of garlic.
That's kind of part of your calling card.
Yeah, exactly.
It literally is.
I have his calling card.
Good moves on my part being French,
yeah,
actually.
Good job. Patrick is the host of many podcasts, including the Phileas Club and Le Rendezvous Tech, a French technology podcast. So go check those out. Frenchspin.com or PatrickBeja.com, which is the best place to go for those?
From patrickbeja.com, you'll get to most of those.
All right. Barnes & Noble, just an hour ago, announced the Nook Color. This is their new version of the Barnes & Noble Nook. It is a e-reader, of course, the Nook. And the Nook Color, I'm saying it like that because there's no space. It's Nook Color. Although some people in the headlines are putting a space in. When I searched for it on the Barnes & Noble website and I put Nook and Color as two words, nothing came up. I had to put Nook Color all as one word. Anyway, it's a 7-inch color touchscreen, 1024 by 600 resolution, 16 million colors. It's got a very nice screen, in other words. There's a lamination film on the surface.
Oh, and it has a little thing for your keys.
Has a little hook on there. I'm not sure what
it
that's
for. It
could
be a keychain.
Yeah.
Apparently.
You get thinking, what rhymes with Nook? And they said hook.
You get web surfing in there, so you can browse around on the web in color. Nook Extras, also one word, are their apps. They come with a few apps, including Pandora to begin with. Other apps to come shortly. Wi-Fi only, though. No 3G. And shorter battery life than the previous Nook because of all that color screen stuff. But newspapers, magazines, books, all the normal things. They're trying to pitch it as the first ever ebook reader that also is a tablet. Which is silly because every tablet is also an ebook reader.
Right, so that's the big thing. Everyone was thinking that it would be possibly, potentially, color e-ink. And everyone at the same time, in the same breath, was wondering, is that even going to be possible? Because color e-ink technology is not going to be ready until probably first quarter 2011, maybe later. And so it was all very exciting. And now they came out with it, and it's just a tablet that doesn't have 3G. The price might be interesting. It's $249, I believe.
Yeah, $249. And it's available for pre-order right now. If you if you go on to Barnes & Noble, you can pre-order it. It's not going to ship until November 19th. They'll also be selling it, in addition to Barnes & Noble, they'll be selling it at Walmart, Best Buy, and bam, Books a Million. You have to say it like that because there's an exclamation point in the name. Bam, Books a Million. So, I don't know Bam, Books a Million, though.
Yeah, never heard of it.
$249 for a sort of tablet. I guess what's really interesting in all this is that it's aimed as a publications platform, or not platform, but device. So they're going to have lots of interesting deals with different, you know, newspapers and, you know, media and press outlets. But apart from that, it seems like having the choice between this and the slew of tablets that are going to come out, I'm not sure it will be interesting since it doesn't even have the advantage of having the e-ink to begin with. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's, you know, they say the most number of magazine and newspaper partnerships of any platform. They're really doing a good job of trying to spin it as an ebook reader that does a lot more instead of a tablet that doesn't do a whole lot. But I think a lot of the folks who are likely to buy something like this are going to see it like that. They're going to look at it and compare it to the Samsung Galaxy Tab. They're going to compare it to the iPad. And while it is quite a bit cheaper than those, and there's no plan involved, the fact that it doesn't have 3G, the fact that it doesn't do this, doesn't do that, I don't think this is a bad thing from Barnes & Noble, but I also don't think it's the thing that puts them over the top. It definitely shows that they get it, though. I mean, this is the right direction to go in, don't you think?
I'm not sure, because it doesn't have the... You can't really read, I suppose, in the sun. I'm curious about the battery life. That would be the big thing.
Yeah, battery life is actually 8 hours now, which is less than the original Nook, which is still going to be sold. You can still buy the original Nook for cheaper, I think. It's $149 or something.
And it's less than an iPad. Again, that has become the standard now.
Or a lot less money.
Right, yeah. You're right. It is less money. But my understanding of these ebook products was that they would become interesting because they would be so much cheaper that it wouldn't even be a decision you would have to make. You'd get a tablet if you wanted one, and you would get these for other uses, you know, specifically to read. And when you put it a little bit, you price it a little bit higher, and you get you lose the advantages of e-ink. I'm not sure it's such a huge good deal, but I don't know. I've been wrong in the past.
We'll see what kind of Nook extras they come out with. To begin with, you get crossword puzzles, Sudoku chess, Pandora, and then you can go to Twitter and Facebook on the web. But you can go to anywhere on the web. So it's
I will say that it seems like it's one of few Android tablets that are going to be available for this holiday season by a pretty well-known manufacturer that might have a little bit of credibility to it. You know what I mean? Versus a lot of the other ones that are being rushed out.
It's not a tablet, Jason. Well, it's an ebook reader.
You call it whatever you want to call it, but it kind of is.
point well taken. I think the Samsung Galaxy Tab is still more compelling, though.
No, I agree. It is compelling, but this is maybe next in that line.
Maybe lots of holiday presents. It's going to be the thing that you can get people for cheaper than a tablet. That kind of is a little bit like a tablet.
Yeah. I guess that's what I was getting at earlier. It's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Google having a bad day today. First of all the travel companies, well, lots of the travel companies, Expedia, Kayak, Sabre Holdings, who operate Travelocity, and Farelogix, have all gotten together to form Fair Search at fairsearch.org. to try to persuade the Justice Department to block Google's deal to buy ITA software. Now, ITA software makes travel fare finding software that a lot of these companies use to power their search results for travel. Google says they just want to buy ITA so they can integrate travel options better into their search engine. These companies say, screw that. You're going to try to sell everybody fares for airlines right through Google, and you're going to run us all out of business.
So is that illegal? Is that bad? How is it? I mean,
well,
I understand it upsets them.
Could be considered antitrust. If Google is the dominant search engine and owns the dominant travel back-end software for finding fares, they could eliminate the marketplace. They could become the only place where you can buy stuff. They could roll out anti-competitive measures. Not that they would, but they could, which is why the Justice Department is looking into this deal.
It seems to me like it's not dominant, it's monopoly that you have to be before it is, considered an issue. And in the search engine space, okay, the other ones are not huge, but, Bing is up there, and it also does, it could do things like this, and I'm not really sure that this would have legs. But
Bing,
again,
would have to buy the search engine results from Google for ITA.
No one else can produce these results.
ITA is the dominant player in that market. So they don't want the dominant... What these guys are responding to is, we don't want the dominant player in the search market buying the dominant player in the fare powering market and then combining and dominating that space altogether. Google says in response, our goal is to build tools that drive more traffic to airline and online travel agency sites where customers can purchase tickets. And they think that the best way to do that is to buy ITA, not just partner with ITA. Because that's the question. It's like, why do you need to buy them? Couldn't you just become a partner and integrate their data? They're like, it's not as good. It works much better if we actually own them.
Maybe.
Yeah. The airline industry is not really responding to this all that much. They're kind of on the fence, waiting to see what happens. And also Microsoft has opposed this deal because Bing relies on data from ITA to power the searches. So they're not part of the fair search thing, but they are against this. Also, so a lawsuit is targeting Google over web referrals. If you do a search on Google, do one right now. Look up something. You'll see in the URL the terms that you just searched for, right? Now, if you click on a link in your search results, the way the web works is the server at the website you're going to is going to record that link that you came from in its database. And that's what the class action suit filed in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California says. That's violating my privacy. If I search for sushi restaurants and I click on a sushi restaurant's website, that sushi restaurant shouldn't know that I was searching for sushi restaurant. That's a violation of my privacy. They got my IP address and the search terms.
I am all for having better privacy and having, you know, options and letting people control their data. But it seems like in the past maybe 3 months, all the tech journalists who had been screaming for more, you know, privacy and protection, who had been outraged for the past, you know, the past maybe 2 years, especially with things from Facebook, sort of had the tidal wave turn almost against them, because I don't think that any of us tech journalists actually consider this to be an actual big deal or even a serious privacy risk. It's like, sure, privacy is important, but come on, this is ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous. And it's not the first story where we're like, really? That's what you're worrying about?
You know, when I was in the grocery store today, I was buying, I'm just going to let you in on this. I was buying a salad. There's a person in line behind me looking right at what I was buying. That's a privacy violation. Maybe then now they think I've got some problem where I have to eat salad. That they have no business knowing that.
Yeah, there are many reasons that you could have salad, and you don't want them to know why you're getting salad.
Exactly. Violation of
privacy. I agree.
By the way, Google CEO Eric Schmidt also having a bad day personally. As we mentioned yesterday, he's been saying some crazy stuff. Yesterday he said, "As you can see from the unedited interview, my comments were made during a fairly long back and forth on privacy. I clearly misspoke." He's referring to the idea that he said, if you don't like Google Street View, just move. "If you are worried about Street View and want your house removed, please contact Google and we will remove it."
Oh, right. That's what I should have said. Sorry.
It's a kinder, more reasonable Eric Schmidt that we see today.
So that might be the one that finally tells him and shows him, maybe you should, you know, wait a couple of seconds because before you do that comment that you think is going to be hilarious.
Think before you speak, Schmidt. Come on.
He takes that Schmidt back. Yeah. There's a glitch in iOS that lets you bypass the lock screen to access the phone app. I'm going to demonstrate it here. So I've got a passcode here. Mm-hmm. I don't need to enter the passcode. I just, you can't really see this, but I press emergency call. I dial anything. I'm going to dial 555-1212, information. I press the call button, and then as soon as it starts to call, I hit the lock button, and voila, nothing happens. Wait a minute. Let me try this again. I'm going to try it without trying to show it on camera. So I press the call button, and then I press the screen lock, and boom,
yep.
My contact stuff comes up. You can see all my contacts. You can see my recent calls. You can actually hold down and do the voice recognition thing and play music. You can find out what music is on here.
So you mean that someone who would have access to your phone could actually randomly know what music you have on your phone, even though you didn't want them to?
Yeah. Well, you know what? The real thing here is the idea of looking at the recent calls or finding a bunch of phone numbers that are on here. Apple has already acknowledged that this is a breach, and they say, "We're aware of this issue. We will deliver a fix to customers as part of the iOS 4.2 software update in November." In the meantime, if you're worried about somebody getting phone numbers or your recent call list off of your iPhone, make sure you guard it with your life. Because
right.
They can.
Yeah, this is again, sort of this in the same vein. I don't think anyone is freaking out over this. It's obviously a serious thing that should be fixed. But It's not really a privacy, you know, a software glitch that is a privacy risk in the same way that other more serious things are actual risks.
Well, this may not have your credit card information, but it has a lot of information about you there that you might not, I mean, if you're putting a passcode on it, that's probably one of the things you're protecting. So it makes the passcode a little unnecessary
sure.
at that point.
Sure, worthless. Of course, I'm not saying I'm not saying it's nothing at all. It's just it's not a huge, you know. It's going to be fixed. It's fine. Yep. Okay, and someone has to have physical access to your phone too, which is
and it's and it's stuff that they wouldn't be able to get to if they didn't know your passcode otherwise. And passcodes have their own ways of being broken with grease prints and stuff like
that. We all know that your passcode is, you know,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hey,
oh, sorry.
Don't give away my passcode. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the $200 million Ecomagination Challenge from GE. It's a new program from GE for entrepreneurs, business innovators, and students. You got an idea on how to make the power grid better? They want to hear from you. In fact, they want to give you $200 million, or at least a part of that. They've got $200 million to invest in great ideas for improving the way energy is produced, transferred, and consumed. The first is renewables. They've got three categories. First is renewables. GE wants to encourage better ways to integrate renewable energy. The second investment category is grid efficiency. Turn that smart grid and that digital energy into some good use. Improve transparency. Reduce waste. Third category is eco homes and buildings. Making that power bill go down. Keeping that energy consumption down. I want to get rid of those higher energy costs. GE and its partners are making $200 million available to invest in great ideas like these. If you've got one that's renewable, it's grid efficient, it's an eco home, learn more and read the ideas and comment on them by going to ecomagination.com/challenge. That's ecomagination.com/challenge. We thank GE for supporting Tech News Today and our show Green Tech Today, which they also sponsor. Be sure to listen or watch Green Tech Today in iTunes or twit.tv. And check out the Ecomagination Challenge. There's some pretty cool stuff going on there. It's an interesting environmental and money-saving project to take a look at. Republican Senator John Ensign of Nevada yesterday announced a bill that would make it more likely for him to get reelected. I mean, it will make it illegal to identify informants working with the U.S. military, which WikiLeaks did earlier this year. This on the face of it, sounds like, to me, a reasonable idea. Let's make it illegal to reveal the identity of informants because that puts them in jeopardy. It's not necessarily essential to the debate about war and policy to have the informants themselves named necessarily. Problem I have with it is current law makes it illegal to disclose classified information already. So not sure why we need the new law, but everybody's after WikiLeaks right now. In fact, there's a secret war, according to The Independent, going on at the heart of WikiLeaks. What's your position on WikiLeaks, Patrick? Do you have an opinion about them and what they do?
Well, this story is very interesting because it seems that at maybe a year ago, 6 months ago, WikiLeaks was definitely this, you know, white knight that would come in and allow for people to basically whistleblow, right? And that was their mission. And in the past few months, it seems like their mission has sort of morphed into trying to out as many scandals as possible. And it might be that this is a valid way of operating, and this is maybe even necessary for them to continue going. But I'm not sure that I'm as comfortable with this second way that they seem to be functioning at the moment. Maybe the two are linked and it's impossible to do one without the other. But I'm sort of torn, and it might be, so I understand it makes sense that there might be a war inside of, you know, at the heart of WikiLeaks.
Yeah, a dozen key supporters of the website are known to have left in recent months. Apparently the debate is over WikiLeaks should continue to focus on its original idea, which was providing a wide access to people who are whistleblowing and even small operations that need a confidential way to reveal information that otherwise might not make it into the public domain that is in the public's interest. The idea of WikiLeaks isn't to just like endanger people. The idea is to actually take folks who are in danger and can't speak up and give them an avenue to allow sensitive information out that needs to be known. And so folks are upset that they've been focusing so much on Afghanistan and Iraq that they haven't really been providing that service worldwide, or at least not focusing on it as much.
Well, it's, you know, and it is, when they first came out with these stories, they were very big, but there's something strange about this. It feels like Julian Assange, the founder, is sort of now, you know, tripping a little bit over the whole WikiLeaks concept. It feels like he has lost sight of his mission. And he claims the exact opposite. He claims that, you know, he is the heart and soul and philosophy and center of WikiLeaks, which is possible, but it does feel like a head trip. I don't know. Do you think that, and putting all these you know, rape allegations aside, which might very well be fabricated, I'm not talking about that. But don't you feel like he's getting a little bit too vehement, maybe? It's hard to describe. But
he definitely is odd. I'll put it that way. And at first you think, well, you kind of need to be odd if you're in this business, if you're going to run WikiLeaks. But it does seem he needs to have some perspective, and he's not getting that. And that's, to me, is told by the number of people who were into helping WikiLeaks who are leaving now, saying, you know what, this is not worth helping anymore. It's turning into a fiefdom. It brings up the question of who watches WikiLeaks. If all these people are leaving, who checks Assange?
That is a good question. And the answer might be this wonderful gentleman at, what's the website name?
CryptoMe.org.
Right.
Is a website that All Things D has a reprint from a Wall Street Journal article about. Guy's name is John Young. He publishes documents. He publishes leak documents. And specifically, he publishes documents about WikiLeaks. And he says he does it not because he doesn't like WikiLeaks, but because he thinks WikiLeaks will be better if he's leaking information about WikiLeaks. It'll help harden them.
So what kind of information is he leaking exactly? Hard to tell, right?
I could not find much, but a lot of the posts apparently have been about emails that are internal, about the debate that we were talking about over whether they should focus on the big issues like Iraq and Afghanistan or the more broad-based access. So it seems like it's mostly debates, email lists, email debates, stuff like that.
But then the question becomes, who watches CryptoMe.org?
Well, that's why I'm starting. No. Yeah, it just goes
you'll be
on
the Watchmen
and on
watching
and on.
The Watchmen watching the Watchmen.
Well, who's going to watch Hadopi, man? You're in France. How's this going? Apparently, Ars Technica reports today that the three strikes rule in France, that's the one that says if you get accused of copyright violation three times, we can get rid of your internet connection. They're getting 25,000 complaints a day submitted to them to go through. Are people freaked out about this? Are the cafes empty? Is everyone stocking up on wine and cheese and barricading the door against the folks coming to turn off their internet?
Well, I don't personally know anyone, I believe, that would illegally download anything anyway. But I don't see that. By the way, it's called Adopi. You don't pronounce the H.
Adopi.
It doesn't seem to me like it's having a whole amount of effect. It's definitely having a lot of effect in the press. I mean, everyone's talking about it, but mostly we're talking about how ineffective and silly and wasteful it is. And they have started sending the emails, the feared and famed emails. I don't know of anyone who got them. And we're only in the first stages of this, right? They're sending the emails first, then they will send an actual letter via snail mail. But the things that we hear about is people calling their hotline because they have a hotline, and within the law is written the fact that you are supposed to be protecting your own network, because one of the first thing that people said was, well, what if I have a Wi-Fi network that gets broken into and someone uses it to download illegal things, then I will be at fault. So the answer in the law that was written in the law was, you have to protect your network. So then the question becomes, how do I protect my network? And really, they don't know. So you call them and they say things like, well, you have to install a firewall, or you have to install parental control software. And this is so fuzzy, and badly written and mostly without any knowledge of the law, of the situation, the state of computers, that I think what comes out of it is that any legal action that gets undertaken by that council is going to be broken in the courts. Now, we don't know that yet, of course. It would have to go there, but there's no way that this is enforceable. So it's not being taken very seriously, I think.
Billboard reports that Adobe is moving cautiously. There were fears that the hotline would be overloaded, but apparently that's not the case.
Well, they don't have anything to say. It's okay, anyway.
Well, people aren't responding with the panic that everyone thought. However, there is a little panic going on around Fire Sheep. This is an add-on for Firefox that boasted 104,000 downloads in 24 hours. What it does is shows you how easy it is to steal your Facebook and Twitter logins, among other sites. It captures cookies that are unencrypted and makes them available for you to click on, and then you can log in as whoever that cookie is for.
So you have to be on that person's local area network,
yeah.
Right?
Same. Well, if you're on let's say you're at Starbucks coffee shop, you're all on the same Wi-Fi network.
It doesn't have to be Wi-Fi though. Like it could be.
Yeah, it could be any network. Yeah. And so if you want to protect yourself from this, if you go to coffee shops, you want to go to the EFF, go to EFF.org/https-everywhere. There is another Firefox add-on called HTTPS Everywhere that actually makes sure that Wikipedia, Twitter, Facebook, most of Amazon, WordPress, New York Times, bunch of other things, PayPal, for instance, are securely connected. It won't let you connect unless there is a secure connection, and that keeps this other add-on from being able to take those cookies. Of course, the main thing that we need them to do is actually encrypt those cookies so that you can't steal them while they're being transferred.
This is a very serious security risk, though, unlike the other things we've been talking about before, because you know that not everyone is going to be downloading, you know, the HTTPS Everywhere add-on, and it's something that is very difficult to counteract. I mean, what are we going to do? I guess what we could do is that all the websites in the world could start using HTTPS, which they should, quite honestly, but
yes,
they probably won't. So this makes every single person connecting to a Wi-Fi network vulnerable very easily.
They could also encrypt the cookies. I mean, it is incumbent on the websites that deliver this information to create secure environments for you to log in. I mean,
so get on that.
I throw out that EFF link, that HTTPS Everywhere link, because you in the audience probably want to know how to stop yourself. You don't want to wait for them to get around to it. It's not the solution to the problem, though. You're right about that. Amazon,
they should get around to it now. Sorry, this makes me angry.
Yes, they should. Amazon has won a fight to keep customer records private. So we'll go through this one real quick. North Carolina wants to tax everybody that buys something from Amazon, because sales tax doesn't apply, so they have something called use tax. So they've gone to Amazon and they've said, hey, give us all of the information about what got sold to North Carolinians. So Amazon complied and they gave specific identification numbers for every purchase, but not the name of the purchaser, only what got bought. So North Carolina said, well, that doesn't help us much. Can you give us the names? And Amazon said, no, we're not going to do that. And a judge has agreed with them and said, no, you cannot find out what books, movies, everyone in the state of North Carolina has bought, even if it's for the purposes of taxation. The government is allowed to go spy on all that stuff. They said if the state of North Carolina destroys all of the data that they have so far, then Amazon could give them some other aggregate data about purchased amounts of individuals. That might be okay, but you can't link the two.
Why didn't they ask for that in the first place?
Well, yes, one wonders why they didn't ask for that in the first place. I think they thought this would be enough and then realized when they started working through it, oh, wait, this doesn't help us at all. Hey, have you ever used Slingbox, Patrick?
I have not, but I would love to.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should think about this. Because this episode of TNT is brought to you by Slingbox. If you don't know, Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go and on any portable, almost any portable device, iPhones, iPod Touch, BlackBerry, laptop, MacBook. You go to Best Buy, you purchase a Slingbox, you bring it home, plug it into your TV, plug it into your internet, install the software on the device you want to watch it on, and then it doesn't matter where you go, as long as you have an internet connection, you could be in Paris, France, visiting Patrick, and you could watch all your live TV and everything that's on your DVR at home with no extra subscription required. Somebody wrote in and said, hey, you know what? My cable system that I get is now allowing me to view stuff off my DVR over the internet for an extra monthly cost. I'm like, well, that's nice, and maybe that'll go somewhere. But Slingbox, you buy the box, and that's it. There's no subscription fees. So, I'm not saying that there's anything untoward here, but we should talk, Patrick.
Maybe I could purchase a television and a Slingbox and station both of those in your house.
Not in my backyard. Maybe in my backyard. Anyway, any of the same shows you watch on your TV at home, sports, news, movies, any other program type, check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com/twit. Are you ready to do the news fuse, Mr. Beja?
I was born ready.
Rumors of the Walkman's death are greatly exaggerated. America, your beloved Walkman is only mostly dead. While the Walkman will no longer be sold in Japan, the Los Angeles Times spoke to a Sony spokesman who said there were no plans to cut it from the U.S. market. Walkman's going to be built in China now. But the Walkman weather radio cassette player, complete with National Weather Service broadcasts, still sells for $29.99 in the United States of America.
So you can still get one to play all of those cassette tapes that you have.
I actually have a bunch.
Ooh. Yeah, the mixes that girlfriends made for you in college.
That's right. Relive those glory days. I'm sure you want to go back to those memories.
Also mostly dead is LimeWire. The company said today it will comply with a court order to stop making file sharing available. Whether this means crippling their software or pulling it altogether is unclear. LimeWire's parent company, Lime Group, has pipe dreams of creating a legal music service that should be out in a month. And nobody's ever failed at that now, have they?
No, of course not.
Absolutely not.
That's a good idea. Worked great for Napster. Like the sightings of unicorns, visions of white iPhones are beguiling, fleeting, and legendary. But Boy Genius Report passes along that the updated Apple Store app listed white iPhones available for reservation. And unlike the beautiful monotusked beasts of tales, the listing has not vanished yet into the mists. I could still do it, although it doesn't actually let you reserve anything. You could actually see white iPhone evidence, like glittering silvery blood trails.
Pics or it didn't happen. Totally coincidentally, and we're sure having nothing to do with the review of their impending merger with NBC Universal, Comcast has taken the beta of its TV Everywhere service called Xfinity TV, and most importantly, removed the restriction on ISP. In other words, you don't have to buy your internet from Comcast to watch streaming video as part of your cable TV subscription.
You can't see that, can you? That's because it's really a white iPhone. It's on there, I swear. Once more into the micropayment breach, dear friends. That's an allusion to when the English kicked French ass at Agincourt. PayPal's micropayment service will debut later this fall, featuring easy two-click purchases for consumers and low fees and quick payment for merchants and publishers. Early adopters include FT.com, GigaOM, and biggest of all, Facebook.
Interesting. It's more than one click, though. Justin Bieber, thy reign is over. Lady Gaga just beat you on YouTube, just beat your YouTube record. According to internet research company FameCount.com, her total currently stands at 1,002,733,757. That's difficult to say.
Wow.
Appropriately responding on Twitter, Miss Germanota, I guess that's Lady Gaga's name, saith, "We reached 1 billion views on YouTube, little monsters. If we stick together, we can do anything. Except getting a 3D movie," which Justin Bieber got.
Take that, Gaga. Last weekend, Google received the next statue in the series that commemorates the major updates of Android OS, indicating the next SDK was coming. I'm assuming it's a gingerbread man. However, there's some doubt as to what the version number will actually be. Many assume gingerbread was synonymous with 3.0, but now there's some evidence that everyone may have jumped the gun, and gingerbread may actually be version 2.3.
That's important stuff. The 11-inch MacBook Air may become more popular with frequent flyers. A TSA spokesman told CNN that travelers will not have to remove their 11-inch Air when going through security checkpoints. No word on whether the 13-inch version will get a pass or not. I'm sort of unsure about this because they said the same thing about the iPad, and I have had to show my iPad to everyone when I was passing.
That's because you're suspicious. I never have to take my iPad out of my case.
Maybe they smelled the cheese and they were like, let's see that guy's iPad.
That's the thing. But it's really small. There's no reason you should have to take it out. The reason you have to take out your laptop is because it's so thick, they can't see easily into all of the compartments if there's anything in the way, right? They want to be able to look inside. Whereas this is thin enough that this
maybe,
is Leo's
maybe brother. I'll argue with them and give them that explanation next time they ask
me. You know what? That's like, I have one of those bags that you can just open up instead of actually taking the laptop out. I've never had any problem until I was coming back from Ontario, Canada, and the lady's like, you have to take your laptop out. And I was like, about to go, well, wait a minute, is it? And then I was like, no, forget it. It's just not worth it. This is not where I'm going to make my stand against this. One of these days, though. On to the calendar. Microsoft has released Office 2011 for the Mac, which includes Outlook, built from the ground up. Office users on the Mac are going to be very excited about this. Has some cloud support built in as well, so you can now collaborate with your 2010 Windows Office friends. T-Mobile is also debuting a tethering plan on November 3rd. T-Mobile users who don't root their phones will be able to pay $15 a month to do tethering from their T-Mobile plans. On to the voicemails, and we've got a video one here entitled Control the Developers, Control the World.
Hey, TNT Show, this is Chris Adams from New Mexico, and I just wanted to let you know my thoughts about the Apple App Store. I say, control the developers, control the world. I think what Apple's doing is brilliant. They're saying, here's an awesome Apple-curated store that does not have any external dependencies. If you download an app from here, it's going to look and feel like a proper Apple application, and it's not going to require any external dependencies. By the way, two of the most popular cross-platform development systems, Java and Flash, are now considered external dependencies. So I think that we're going to see a decline of cross-platform software. And I think it's going to be incredibly expensive for developers to develop cross-platform and still be in the most popular, the most profitable distribution channel for Apple software, the new App Store.
For Apple software, maybe. It will probably be the most... He's got a point. It's devilish. I don't love it. Don't even like it. But I think he might be right.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a very valid way of going. He's talking about the App Store itself, though, not really the developers. I'm not sure they want to control the developers. They want to control the apps, but...
They're pushing the developers into going and playing by their rules, though. I think that's...
Yeah. Yeah, sure. The one thing, though, that not many people said about that App Store is that it's going to, when you buy an app from there, you get license for as many computers as you want. And that is a killer feature.
That's one of those few benefits of digital rights management that you get from that. That's true. I like it.
Although if you have multiple users on that computer, how is it going to work?
Although, you know what? If I go to opensourcemac.org and download open source programs for Mac, I can install them on every computer, even the ones I don't own, legally.
You got me again, Merritt.
All right. We have one other caller who called 260-TNT-SHOW with a pertinent question about Ubuntu's Unity interface.
Hey, Tom and TNT crew. Tom, you mentioned the new Ubuntu desktop Unity yesterday and talking about how that was going to be a great addition to Ubuntu. Being a blind Linux user, the new Unity desktop is not going to be good. It's breaking the accessibility within the Linux desktop, and us blind people are going to be left out of being able to use the Ubuntu desktop. Thanks. Love the show.
That is a very good point, and so I did a little searching and found Luke Yelovich, who's a developer for accessibility on Ubuntu, and said, yes, Unity in its current form does not have much in the way of accessibility. It doesn't even have keyboard navigation to move around the environment, let alone assistive technology support. However, For the 11.04 release, I will be working very closely with the Unity developers to implement accessibility and keyboard navigation support, so much so that it will be my primary focus for this cycle. I will also attempt to address any other accessibility issues we need to fix, like the installer, if I get the time. So this is another one of the things I love about open source and open development is you can find the guy whose job it is to push for that concern that you have and talk to him on a forum like this one at FossPlanet.com and get a direct and honest answer. It's pretty cool. And hopefully it means that they'll develop accessibility so that Ubuntu will be able to have that same kind of accessibility that they should and still switch to the Unity platform.
Awesome. Go Ubuntu.
On to the emails, to TNT at twit.tv. We got one from Mike, says, "Hey, TNT crew, I was listening to the segment on Monday's show about Wi-Fi direct-enabled devices. Could this possibly come to iOS devices? I'd find it quite useful to be able to do one on gaming, or bump transfers using Wi-Fi rather than Bluetooth. Love the show, guys. Keep up the good work." Thanks, Mike. Is that something you want to do? Would you want to print from your iPhone, Patrick?
Of course. I mean, that's what it's all about. When I heard, you know, Wi-Fi Direct, I thought iPad and iPhone. So, yeah, I certainly hope it's gonna arrive. And from what you were saying in prep, Tom, Apple is part of the Wi-Fi Direct Shadow Council.
Yeah.
Or something.
I don't know if it's called the Shadow Council, but it ought to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the backers on the Wi-Fi Direct team, whatever it's called, one of them is Apple. So it's likely that you would see Wi-Fi Direct implemented in Apple products, hopefully iOS, but we don't know.
Mm.
All right. Well, Patrick Beja, thank you so much for filling in. Becky should be back tomorrow, but it was great having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And of course, as always, you know, don't be shy. Let people know where they can find you.
Well, yeah, I wait for you to tell me where can people find you, because I don't want to impose, you know. So people, if you like French language podcasts, you can find a whole slew of them at nowatch.net, both audio and video. And if you want to find out more about myself and what I do, you can go to patrickbeja.com and you'll find all the links there.
Merci, Patrick. Thanks again for being on the show. And of course, you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Hey, if you're thinking I want to download the TNT theme, you can get to it. Go to twit.tv/TNT, click on the link for the wiki, and then go to the front page of the wiki. The link is right there on the front page of the Tech News Today wiki. You can also give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW, or email us, TNT@twit.tv. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye. Bye.